saying that being a startup founder is like swallowing glass on a daily basis. Everyone thinks like from looking from the outside, it's like this fun thing, but what is it? 90% of startups fail. And then like you're technically failing every day. I mean, having a startup is
You're
surviving on a
minimizing
daily
failure.
basis.
That's all you're doing is like,
Yeah. It,
how
that's
can I
it. It's
fail
not
the least
about
amount today?
swimming. It's about not drowning and figuring out what log you need to hold on to that day until you get to a point where you've built a boat. But you're kind of sailing and building at the same time. So that's the exhausting part. And that's probably why most of us end up at the bottom of the ocean and then we go at it again because we're delusional. And some of us make it and some of us make it big. And then you see a bunch of unicorns as examples. And then you're like, I could do that.
Welcome back to the Ignite podcast. Today, we're delighted to have Melise Doral, the co-founder, CEO of Ecos. Well, actually, not even co-founder, just founder, right?
Yep, I am just founder.
Just founder, no co-founder here. Okay, I just went through Techstars Boston, where we were lucky enough to invest a long time ago, well before the Techstars Accelerator. But welcome to the
Yep.
program. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ryan.
Well, we'd love to get an intro from you for the audience so they know who you are, what you're about, and what is Ecos?
Absolutely. So, thank you for the intro again. My name is Melissa Durrell. I'm the founder and CEO of Ecos.ai. We are a community engagement platform for hybrid community building. The focus of Ecos is driving quality interactions, bridging the gap between events, meetings, and community, based on shared experiences and interests. And the reason that I started it and/or became so obsessed over community and networking in general is because I'm from Turkey, came to the US when I was 18 years old. And had to do a ton of networking post graduation in 2009 to be able to get to where I am today. So I learned a lot. I learned a lot from attending events, from talking to a ton of community managers, event organizers, and I wanted to build a tool that created ease of use for both the community managers and the members.
So what is Ecos? It's a platform for engagement, and I remember you describing it as sort of like this for hybrid workers and
It's
organizations
for
now,
hybrid
because we're not all in the same
community.
office building. Yeah.
Yeah, it's for hybrid community building. So it's an all-in-one solution. It consolidates various community management tasks into a single platform, reducing the need for multiple tools and simplifying the workflow for community managers. A community manager uses an average of 12 tools, which is the
Wow.
major reason for loss of engagement as members switch from tool to tool. We have automated networking, efficient event management, data integration, super user-friendly interface. And our focus has been not only how do we create an all-in-one solution, but also how do we reduce the friction for people to be able to network and build community. And one of the things that we noticed as we were building initially was a lot of community managers use events, whether they're virtual or in person, to be able to create those special moments for their members, for their customers. While doing discovery, and I think initially our beachhead was very much accelerators and incubators, we realized that angel groups wanted this, brand communities, business communities, city communities, customer communities, and a lot of them were using tools that were not necessarily creating that bridge between events and community.
Now, why not just use Slack and Eventbrite? Like, what is it about your platform where I can't get it done? Like you mentioned community managers are using 12 different tools. So yeah, unpack
Yeah,
that a
no,
bit.
absolutely. So Slack is a great example. So when you go into a Slack channel, and you and I are members of many, you don't necessarily know who's most relevant to you, what they do, and why you should be talking to them. You're in multiple threads. What you do is you ask a question, and then you kind of spray and pray that someone will respond to you. With Ecos, it's much more meaningful than that. It tells you who can answer your questions. It tells you who's relevant to you based on shared experiences as well as expertise. So if you're a product manager, I'm asking a question about product, or I'm looking for someone who's an expert in product, I can find you easily either through my directory or through the lounge. And when you have virtual and in-person events using your community space, the members can also easily network prior and post these event experiences, finding people that are relevant to them versus just using it as a communication tool. It creates more relevancy that allows us to be able to bridge those gaps that we have between events and community. And Eventbrite is a great example as well. Eventbrite is an amazing event tool. Communities use it to be able to host their in-person virtual experiences, but it doesn't necessarily allow them to then take those people and bring them into a community space where you can see upcoming events as well. So what happens is you usually attend an event and then you get another email saying like, hey, join my Slack channel. With Ecos, we kill two birds with one stone. You can either automatically add everyone that attends that event to your community, they get an invitation, or you could host a public event and say, and decide later if you want to add those people to your community. But although we're trying, our focus is to make the community manager's life easier. We've also been thinking about the members, because unless members are engaged, community managers switch platforms constantly. Mm-hmm. So the important thing for members is for them to be able to get to the right people at the right time and not feel like it's just a channel that appears on their computer here and there that they're not necessarily engaging in.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, there's kind of this... It's almost like the Starbucks, what Starbucks solved for 20, 30 years ago, creating a third place. And now it seems that we need a third place in cyberspace where it's not office, it's not email and chat. It's like this other thing where we can collaborate and communicate and find people like us. And
there's that, Brian. And there's also the problem of not being able to find communities that are relevant to you. So let's just say you're in New York. And you are looking for a community, or you're looking for an event that's relevant to you. There's so many platforms that are out there that you can kind of join, and it'll suggest experiences based on things you've clicked on or attended, but not necessarily platforms that are allowing you to be able to then join new ecosystems and engage with new people and be a part of a pickleball community as well as a business community at the same time. Mm. Our future goal is to be able to create and become that epicenter for all communities and allow people to be able to not only market their communities, but also find new ones to join.
That makes sense. So the customer here is both businesses and consumers. So it could be affinity groups like pickleball groups, like in my place where I live, where I'm going to play pickleball tomorrow. It's funny you mentioned that. My wife signed me up.
I love pickleball.
It's funny that it's so big now. Like when I grew up in Seattle, it was just a thing up there in the 80s, 90s. But now it's like really big. My Lifetime Fitness, which is like 20, like an upscale 24-hour fitness here locally where I live, they took down the tennis courts. They just took them down. They're pickleball courts now. I guess not enough people are playing tennis.
I mean, when I first started playing, and it was a few years ago, when I looked to the side, and I was playing tennis at the time, it looked like a ping pong met tennis in some sort of, and like wiffle ball at the same time. Anyway, I love playing it. But the point is, we are not just one thing anymore. We are not just a title. We are not, I'm not just a founder. I'm also an avid skier. I'm a basketball player. I like reading. I like listening. I do.
Nice.
I play pickup during the weekend. So I think that the important thing is, I think the important thing here is to be able to build something that doesn't make you feel like you have to pick a persona to be able to be a part of it. Because the face that we bring and the profile that we hold when we're in front of venture capitalists or customers are different. Who we are with customers are different. And then who we are. So when who I am when I'm buying from like a HubSpot is different. And who I am when I'm raising money is also different. Yeah. And the conversations that we have and what's important to us and what makes us relevant.
We're multidimensional, like humans are,
exactly.
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's like the thing about events
I have my basketball group too, where it's all basketball and talking shit and talking about who missed that layup at the end of the game or whatever. And then, I have my Discord community for gaming, right? Like I'm a gamer and like that's a whole different community with different...
Exactly. Like, I mean, I wish I could find more people to play Mario Kart with during COVID. I mean, I should probably look for it harder. But at the end of the day, we meet, we cross paths with people through event experiences and communities that we belong to.
Yeah.
And although our focus is to become a seamless solution for community managers, And that's what we're building and we're learning from them every day. And they're great at giving feedback. We're seeing that communities are on the rise, customer communities. Brands are very much focusing on their customer communities, creating opportunities for them to get to know each other, creating opportunities for them to give feedback. I mean, studies show that you do better with a brand is if your customers become more engaged as long as they feel like there's a multidimensional approach to engagement. So I can meet other customers, I can have a closer relationship with account managers, I attend events. That's how you keep customers. That's how your retention becomes high. But that's also how you get feedback from great customers who are telling you this is working, this is not, or you know, can you do this any differently? It's reason that we got to where we got to as well. It was very much organic growth and word of mouth, and really listening to our customer. But
there's kind of a viral loop inherent in running a community management platform like this, right? Because you get a community signed up, and then inevitably out of dozens or hundreds or thousands of people in that community, there's going to be somebody else that's in a different community. And they're like, wow, I'd really like to use this in this other adjacent community. And then it just kind of can snowball from there, right?
Yeah. I mean, events, I think, are definitely, and I hate using this term, but a mousetrap. But at the same time, it's how people grow their communities. So there are free communities and that's very focused on feedback or customer communities or accelerators. And then there are paid communities, like professional networks, where people require a membership fee so that they can monetize the community, but also they offer events and, again, those special moments. Because you are paying to play, you know, product communities, female founder communities, there's tons and tons of different types of communities. And I think that this is just the tip of the iceberg at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. So how are you guys growing the business? Who's your target customer? Are you kind of looking for these community manager type people at organizations and kind of trying to sell into them, or how's that work?
So our focus is to target community managers in general within the tech industry. We've been leaning more towards finding people who are within marketing and sales, who are actually hosting. So you gave a great example. You said, well, why wouldn't someone just use an Eventbrite in the Slack? Right. So those are the people we're going after, the people who are the buyers, the decision makers of like, okay, great, let's use Slack and let's use Eventbrite. And then, you know, let's use MailChimp and, you know, several other things. The success that we've been seeing, we're still really early on, is very much with community managers within the tech ecosystem. So people who are using community to be able to reach either a larger audience or be able to keep their current audience engaged as well. And I think we'll keep learning how to, I think we know who our personas are and who our ICPs are, but I think we'll keep evolving and figuring out where our next customers are. There is we actually looked at this the other day. There's about like $2.7 billion people who have community manager title in general. And those are just the ones who are calling themselves community managers. We have people who work in marketing and sales. We have people who are head of angel groups, who are program managers. We have others who are managing alumni groups for universities. Those are all our clients.
I'm a head of an angel group. Tell me, like, pitch it to me. Like, why should I use this? Like, I just did a big event in Silicon Valley.
I didn't
use your platform. I should have, but
Brian. I mean, so think of it this way. So you have, you're a head of an angel group. So you have a ton of LPs, and these LPs give you money and they want to invest in startups. They're not just interested in investing in startups. They also want to be able to meet each other. There's a mm-hmm. reason that they chose your group versus some other group. It's because you probably have a mission and vision that goes along with what or whatever you stand for resonates with them.
Right.
If you bring your community to Ecos, it's not just about their personal, their professional lives. It also allows them to be able to connect on a personal level as well. So for example, they'd be able to see who's playing golf. They'd be able to see who's playing pickleball. They'd be able to see all of your upcoming events. They'd have access to resources and the startups that they have invested in, and to be able to not use you as that introductory bridge and to take the conversations on themselves.
Yeah, I think that resonates. That makes sense. Because, you know, a lot of these affinity groups, it's really about the connections you make, right? There's another startup out there, River. Have you run across these guys?
I don't think so, no.
I think they came through Launch, another accelerator, and they're basically trying to do that. They're, you know, building these kind of affinity event-based kind of groups around big podcast influencers, right? So it's a different kind of market, but similar. I think there's also this timing thing. As I think about this as an investor, you know, we've kind of lost in a way in our culture. We all used to go to church. Not many people do anymore. And then we all used to go to the office, and not many people do anymore. And so we're kind of like now searching, grasping around in this like postmodern, post nihilistic society of like, how do we find our people? Right.
Yeah.
And we're kind of looking for reasons and ways of getting together around common shared interests. Right. So like in a lot of ways, a platform like Ecos is like right platform at the right time. Yeah. You probably could have built this 10 years ago. Right. There's nothing whiz-bangery AI LLM about it.
Yeah.
But it kind of is like a timing thing in a lot of ways.
But then
right?
I think I would have gotten the question of like, what, how is this different from Facebook or Meta, now Meta than Facebook? And I think the focus is you can create a group. You can create a group on Facebook. You can create a group on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
But is it really community focused? I mean, yeah, and people do. But is the focus of that community to just drive posts? Or is it to meet each other and build relationships and create that all-in-one solution for a community manager? I mean, community is crucial for several reasons. It's social support. It's belonging and identity. It's shared resources and knowledge. It's socialization and connection. Shared meaning. Connection is so important, especially post-COVID. I mean, whether you're using is an internal tool or an external tool, connection is important for your customers. Connection is important for your founders. Connection is important for your angel group. That's why they stay. That's why they write the next check. That's why they purchase your next SaaS tool. That's why they attend your events, because they are looking for connection. And as a result, then they collaborate. If you've built something good, as a result, they collaborate and they cooperate. And that's what any community manager can ask for. That's when you have high ROI. That's when you have high engagement.
I love that. What is the genesis of this? So you came from Turkey as an 18-year-old to go to college. Like, tell us about that story.
Yeah, I did. So I went to school in Switzerland before that, actually. So I was in Switzerland for about 4 years, came for college. I graduated in 2009, and a lot of people remember that was not a great year to graduate and find a job. I was
same.
On a visa.
I was 2003, like really bad time to graduate.
I'm very social. I've always played a lot of sports. So I had a lot of friends within my age group, but not necessarily anyone who was within the professional world that could refer me. I needed a visa. I needed to be sponsored, all of these things. So those created bottlenecks for me. I started using LinkedIn and back in those times, meetups quite a bit. I think that during that time, my focus was, well, how can I attend as many things as possible? How can I find other people, like-minded people who are in positions, who I can build relationships with and who are in positions that could, you know, potentially help me find my next job? My first job, I think my boss and I met while we were shopping, which was interesting. We were trying on dresses next to each other. So again, shared moments, shared experiences. And then ever since then, it's been through meeting people through either attending events, attending conferences, being in the same space with them, building a relationship. And then when the time comes, them reaching out to you and saying, hey, we have this position open. We think you'd be great for it. And when after that, I went to business school. I did business school. I did Babson, but I worked at the same time. And I got super curious
about part-time and work full-time. Yeah. Yep.
And I got super curious about the space while I was in Babson as well. I wanted to figure out how there's, you know, a tool that you use for sales and recruiting. And I think LinkedIn is amazing for that. But like, why isn't there one that really enables engagement and relationship building, and not like a work tool that, you know, Slack is, but more so for affinity groups, for, you know, events that create that
angel groups,
bridge angel groups, VCs, I know, anything, professional groups.
I'm kicking and myself because I should already be using your platform, and I'm not. And I'm such a bad
VC.
Well, Ryan,
I'm sending you an invitation code right now.
Yeah, exactly.
This.
I should have already been using it. Sorry.
But I think that when you look at it that way, then you kind of figure out, okay, great. there's a space for this, but the part that I was more so obsessed with was the networking portion.
Yeah.
And I realized that the networking portion is very much B2C, and you'd have the chicken or the egg situation. So if you went after the B2B side and you went after the community managers, then you don't have the issue of being able to, you know, spend a ton of money on marketing and sales, and you can bring in communities through community managers and event organizers because they're already doing that. So you're bringing them in bulk.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. We grew organically. We learned a lot. We've had some amazing partners who have given us their time and given us feedback, told us what they wanted us to build, what they were frustrated with current tools. And I think we're going to keep doing what we're doing. And
well, it's kind of, it reminds me of the James Barksdale quote, right? Which is like, you make money by bundling and unbundling, right? So you have like all these, like, you know, you could think of like Facebook as like the Craigslist, the next version of Craigslist that has like, it's the Swiss Army knife. It kind of does a lot of things, but nothing in particular well. And it's kind of like what old people use now, and like nobody wants to use it. And now you can bundle together this, all the community aspects, and do a way better job than Facebook does.
Yeah. And I mean, AI in general has evolved so much. And so the things that we can do today are not the same things that we could have done 8, 10 years ago. So our aim is to really create, we're using AI in a way to be able to create a seamless experience for the community managers, automating things, making things seamless, but also for the members. And again, I keep getting this question of, well, you know, are you selling to the community manager or the member? We are today, our focus is to sell to the community manager, the event organizer, the person who's driving the marketing and sales for an organization, or a program manager, or head of alumni. Our aim is to sell to them. But if we cannot engage the members, if we cannot create a seamless solution for the members, we still end up with one customer who's going to get hit with 100 members, 200, 300 members who are complaining about a tool. So learning and understanding where the friction is, learning and understanding, you know, what creates more ease of, how can we create more ease of use, is making the community manager's job easier, which means we can then keep them for the following year and the following year.
Yeah. Tell us about the Techstars program. So there's probably some founders out there listening right now that are considering going to an accelerator. What are some pros and cons? Why did you choose Techstars? And what was that experience like?
Absolutely. Techstars was great. I actually met Kurti Levy, who is currently in charge of Boston, who I think was at Iowa before, at an event. And I was in my, I think it was right post-COVID, I was on my scooter. We were outside of Tate, and she walked up to me and she said, "I've heard a little bit about your company. Tell me more. I'm looking for a community engagement tool." And at that time, it was for Techstars Crypto, and they were very much hybrid, and it was very scary for us because obviously we were not fully built yet. So we definitely did a lot of learning throughout that program while we were being used as their tool. And then we applied to the Boston program. We got in. Our experience has been great. We have met amazing mentors. The Techstars community goes beyond just your city. You have access to mentors across the globe, and other founders who are Techstars founders are much more interested to talk to you if you approach them as another Techstars founder.
Right.
And we did a lot of learning through the program. So I think that it doesn't matter where your company is, how, if you have a product, don't have a product, it would be, they obviously suggest for you to at least the idea is some sort of an MVP, but I think they have a lot of info online that you could look for as well. But I would definitely suggest that for anyone who's looking for a great support group, both on the investor side, both on the mentor side. And I think the biggest thing I got out of it was the friendships that I made with other founders that I went through the program with. We have supported each other through the program. We still support each other. We call each other with questions with go-to-market, with pricing. We share our investors list. So you really gain access to this amazing, amazing community, which I think not only helps you as a founder, but helps your company as well as other people who belong to your organization to get to the next level.
Yeah, I love that. So you'd recommend, you know, to sum it up, you'd recommend Techstars to any founder looking?
I definitely would. It depends on where you are in terms of selling. So if you might be past that point, then in that case, I wouldn't. I mean, there's also YC, you know, YC that I think that.
At what point are you too late, you think? Like at what point it's like, you're kind of like 500K ARR? Well, like what is that kind of, you're like, you got enough going on.
If you're pulling 500K ARR, please do not give any percentage of your company away.
Yeah.
Then you're either doing it on your own or you're going after VCs. But I think that if you are somewhere between 0 to 10,000 in MRR.
Yeah, 0 to 10. Yeah. You're kind of early.
Yeah, 0 to 10 in MRR.
Not quite repeatable, not quite scalable yet.
Yeah, you kind of know who you're, like, you've maybe made a sale or two. Maybe you haven't. Maybe you've had an engagement letter signed. Maybe you haven't even had that, but you have this great idea.
Pilots.
You talk to your friend.
Yeah.
In some of these scenarios, they don't even have paid pilots. They know who their competitors are. For now, that changes as well.
Yep.
They know what they're building, and they've kind of identified a market and a white space that they can kind of go after. And if you can showcase that when applying to Techstars, I think this is definitely the accelerator for you, because you go through a very intensive program. You get a lot of support. Stay close to your managing directors. You also get an amazing team with, as well as, you know, having that relationship with your managing director. You have several other people helping you within that ecosystem. I mean, I speak to Jennifer Davis probably on a daily basis. I'm sure want to speak less to me, but and it's not just about your startup, it's about questions about the market, what they're seeing in terms
Jennifer
of
Jennifer Davis. Is that your partner there?
So Jennifer Davis is a head of investments at the Boston Techstars.
Okay, got it. Okay.
And she's been with Techstars. Oh my god, she's the investment principal, so I think she's been with Techstars for a while now. I'm going to have to check how long. Yeah, she's been with Techstars for 3 years at this point, maybe a little over 3 years. But it's those types of relationships that help you get to the next level. And I mean, I don't need to mention it to you, but you know, funding's been difficult last year as well as this year, let alone being a female founder in general. So
those types of... What's difficult about being a female founder?
Well, I mean, the stats are out there. What do we get, 2%?
2% of it,
Yeah, it was like 2%, and I think within that 2%, they include people who have co-founders and or people who are have female founding team members as well. So it's pretty low. I mean, that's pretty grim.
Why is it so low? There's lots of capable women out there. I mean, my wife's an exited founder, like started a company and exited, but it's really rare.
I don't know, like, Brian. Yeah. I think the only way that the successful female founders can think about it is. And or people who are trying to be successful female founders, the more impact we make, the more exits we have, the more money we raise or products that we build that create noise, the more of us out there will get funding. It's unfortunate that we get this percentage. I don't know the reason.
Women are just smarter than men, and they kind of look at a startup and they're like, that's not going to work. They're right. Most of the time, you'd be right. Right? That's like not going to work.
I think,
and men are like, I can make this work.
Yeah, I think someone, and I think it was actually Sarah Letterman who said to me, "You have to be a little delusional to be a founder." That is
a little bit
absolutely accurate. Yeah, because I recently watched a video. I'm pretty sure it was Elon Musk talking about it, but don't quote me. Saying that being a startup founder is like swallowing glass on a daily basis. Everyone thinks like from looking from the outside, it's like this fun thing, but what is it? 90% of startups fail. And then like you're technically failing every day. I mean, having a startup is surviving.
You're minimizing
on a daily
failure.
Basis.
Yeah. That's all you're doing. Least amount today. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not about swimming. It's about not drowning and figuring out what log you need to hold on to that day until you get to a point where you've built a boat, but you're kind of sailing and building at the same time. So that's the exhausting part. And that's probably why most of us end up at the bottom of the ocean. And then we go at it again because we're delusional, and some of us make it and some of us make it big. And then you see a bunch of unicorns as examples. And then you're like, I could do that.
Yeah. How much are you?
I don't know why. Yeah. I don't know why we get 2%. I mean, I have a ton of amazing, very successful female founder friends who have amazing companies, amazing ideas. We've all had a tough time raising, but I think
I have
most
three.
Of us have
I,
not
I
given
have three
up.
Solo female founders in my portfolio I can think of off the top of my head. But you're right. Like I think 125 companies now with a female founder. yeah, there's only got to be like 10 or 20. I'd have to go back and count it up again. I made a post about this 6 months ago, I think, because I did actually tally it up at one point. I was like, how many actually have female founders? And it wasn't that much.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what the, I would love to know the percentage of like how many of them get to seed stage. Cause like, you know, 2% get funding, but like at what point is it pre-seed? Is it seed? Do they get to A? You know, what percentage get to A? And I think, any founder, any entrepreneur, the first pat on the back comes when you take that leap and you start a company.
Yeah.
Hands down. That's the hardest part. I think the next part is going through building something that, you know, people use and taking feedback on a daily basis. It feels like someone's slapping you around. And then it's going to, you know, raise money and someone telling you that your idea is not good enough and or you're not, you don't have enough traction or your competitors are going to blow you out of the water or, you know, they don't think that you have a viable product. So you have to be really used to taking one negative feedback.
Yeah,
oh yeah. Just have to take, you have to be ready to get punched in the face on a daily basis and get up the next day and say, no, I'm amazing. This is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
We're going to do this. And I think the only way to succeed there is staying really close to your customers and really building, not thinking too much about, and I've gotten this question of like, well, what's your exit strategy? What about 5 years from now? I care exit more about strategy. Building something.
I never want to hear that. There is no exit strategy. There is no plan B.
I care more about building something that people are going to use today and figure out how they're going to be using it in 5 years.
That's what I want to hear. Yeah, there is this vision. To answer that question for you, like, what is that vision for you guys 5-10 years? Not your exit strategy, but like, you know, like you look back, like, hey, this is a big success. What happened? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that. I started this by wanting to create something that was networking in your pocket and that everyone uses anywhere you go, any city that you land in, you pick it up, you open it up. And instead of a dating application, you use Ecos to find communities, people and events that are relevant to you. And then you if you want to start a community, that's what you think of because this is, you know, how you get to be able to market your community, market your events. And that's where I want to be in 5 years. I want to be that thing that bridges that gap for anyone, for someone who doesn't have a community, someone who just moved from, you know, another country to the U.S., from the U.S. to another country, moved to a new neighborhood, doesn't know anyone and wants to create those relationships, those friendships, not just by attending events, but actually understanding who they should be meeting within that event, who they should be meeting within that community. And that was my focus when I was building in the beginning. It was just, well, how do I figure this out so that people feel a little less lonely and feel like they're getting a little bit more help. And how can we make it frictionless? And the thing that I realized is I was not going to be able to, especially as a first-time founder, I was not going to be able to do that by going B2C first. So I realized that B2B B2B was the way to go. And there were a lot of community managers out there who were asking for help, who were looking for better products, for products that help their members as well. And that's what we're trying to do.
I love that. How much, I'd love to look at stats on athletes and founders, right? Because I have a feeling that, you know, playing competitive sports such as you have probably informs a little bit about being a founder. Like, what do you think the transferable skills are there that you've kind of taken with you?
Do you think the delusion comes from there? I mean, is it that you think that you could score 22 baskets in like, you know, a minute and 10 seconds and win that
game? Yeah, you're only as good as your last shot, right? You kind of like,
And so,
you're kind of going after that next, like that next bucket or something. Yeah.
So I think athletes don't think about their previous wins. They always think about what's next. It's difficult to celebrate and what medal you got last week, what you did 3 weeks ago, if you were, you know, state champ the following, the year before. Yeah, you have to stay in the present. I think this is the same for founders. You don't have time to sit and celebrate because you're constantly, you have to be very agile. You're constantly evolving. Your product's evolving. The market's evolving. Your customers are evolving. I think that because I'm an athlete and because I played competitive sports, you know, I ski, I play basketball, that very much helped me. And that created that endurance that I needed because let me tell you, it's not easy. It feels extremely lonely. We also were talking about this the other day. We wish we had a better support system. We wish we had a better support system for founders in general that allowed us to be able to not only talk to each other and, you know, help each other out, but also for someone to come out there and say like, hey, not just articles that says, you know, here's what, this is what founder burn looks like. You know, this is what, it's hard to raise money as, you know, a female founder, or you're going to run into customers like this and it's going to make you hate your life. But more so of, hey, this is normal and it's okay to feel like this because this is what happens to, like, there are certain things that happen to every founder. And then there are things that happen that are different because of industries or who you are, what you're trying to build. And I think that being an athlete, you build that type of endurance, or you're used to the pain, because no pain, no gain. And so that's the part that's the delusion that happens. So you wake up the next day when someone's told you what you're building is silly, or, you know, it's not good enough. You wake up the next day and you say, no, because, you know, I'm going to now.
How can I do better? I make the next step?
Or I'm going to go get 4 more customers between 8 a.m. and 12 at noon and show that person. And that's the athlete that talks.
Yeah, that's the athlete.
Oh,
you think
I can't sell this? Let me go sell this. You think I can't raise money? Let me go show you.
Yeah.
That's where the athlete comes in.
I love that. I had a VC friend of mine on the show, Cam Duty from Brickyard, really cool accelerator down in Tennessee. And he said, and I'd love to hear if you agree, that every founder, just by grinding it out, should be able to get to Series A. Do you agree with that?
I think every founder, if given the same opportunities, should be able to get to Series A, but not all of us get the same ops. Like, I was very lucky. Yeah. Not everyone has, I had more connections. I had built a community prior to starting this company. Not everyone has that. And I think not everyone has access to the virtual and or physical rooms that some of these relationships live in. So democratizing that, if we are able to at some point, maybe with Ecos, democratize that, then yes. If you can figure out how you can tread water, you can get to Series A.
I love that.
That's how I feel.
Which is why we invest post-launch, post-revenue, because it's like, okay, you got some revenue, you're default alive, cool.
Yeah.
Like, you'll grind it out, figure it out.
Exactly.
It's hard to give up on your customers when you have 20, 30K of MRR. It's kind of like, I can't give up on these customers that believe in me. And it really de-risks it a little bit.
Most VCs want to see that, you know, for you to not only de-risk that, but also they want you to have a big vision. They want you to de-risk it so that they feel like you already have, you know your customers, you know your persona, your ICP, and you're definitely it's going to evolve, but at least you now know that you can sell to a few people and you have a go-to-market strategy to then go and sell to 100 of them or 200 of them.
Right.
So once you have that, you can evolve.
Yeah. Love that. Where do you play pickup?
So I play pickup in Brooklyn. I live in Chelsea, so I go over the bridge. There's a ton of games that go on outside. It's actually right by, there's an outdoor movie theater during the summer. I think it's in the month of, they open up in, I think, July and August, but it's right there. I think it's a pier two.
Play outside?
At the pier two. Okay. Yeah, outside. Oh, I don't, wow. I used to play a lot in the winter. I haven't found a place to play in the winter yet, but anytime I can put, if anytime I can hoop, I hoop, but it just depends on where I am.
Yeah. I play at Lifetime locally here. I'm east of Sacramento, Northern California, and there's a Lifetime.
Oh, nice.
Good group of guys. We play, there's always like pickup games going almost anytime you go. So I'm about to play tonight, Monday night.
That's awesome. So it's interesting. So basketball is a great example as well. I think that basketball, if you're doing singular sports, it's a little bit more difficult, but if you're doing team sports, building a company or creating a product isn't just about creating the product. You then have to attract a team, and then you have to lead that team.
Yeah.
So I think that those are some of the things that are important to, and I've seen that a lot of VCs or angel investors look for in a founder is, okay, great. You have a great idea, but can you now bring people with you? Can you make believers out of, because the first believers, the first recruiting that you do, the first people that you want to invest in your idea besides yourself is the team that you're forming around you. And then it's, you know, angels and then VCs and more.
Yeah.
But if you get them and you continue to get them, then that's how, I think that's how you can grow.
Yeah, you got it. Well, why don't we wrap up with a rapid fire round?
Sure.
Sounds good. What's one book every entrepreneur should read?
That's a tough one. I'm more on the podcast side, I'm super ADHD. So for me, the most important thing is like anything that's kind of consumable. But I forget the person who leads these podcasts, but there are ones, like the one that I remember the most is the one about Airbnb. I'm going to actually find you the name of it.
Crucible Moments, the Sequoia one.
Is that it?
I think they had an episode on Crucible Moments recently about Airbnb. And I think probably Blitzscaling also had one from Reid Hoffman. Probably had an Airbnb.
I think it was the Reid Hoffman one, but yeah. I'll have to look. Go back and look.
Just search and Airbnb. I'm sure you'll find it.
I'm actually looking for it right now. Yeah. And then I think that for case studies, the ones that I learned, and Babson just makes you do a ton of case studies, but there are a lot of ones around, you know, what Starbucks did in terms of how they were able to create and differentiate, and then how they grew and how they picked on where their stores are and who they were servicing. That was super interesting to me. But if you're, when I first started, and I wish I could show you a picture of what my apartment looked like, I bought every book and thinking, okay, it doesn't matter. Like, I know I'm going to be able to read all of these. I ended up reading maybe half of one, and most of them were very much about, you know, how to get from zero to one mil. I think zero to one is one of them. Yeah. And then the others were most about go-to-market strategies and product and creating like a minimum viable product. But the thing that I learned from my experiences is talking and learning from either others who have built and failed, yeah, and or others who are and or your customers is the fastest way that you can fail and the fastest way you can succeed. Because it allows you to be able to get hit in the face and then get up the next day and figure out what the problem was and fix it or change it. And yeah, you have to be as agile as possible. So that would be my answer.
Yeah, it's funny. I used to hate podcasts, you know, 10 years ago. You know, I was much more of a book learner and I would read books and read a lot of books. And then over the last, I'd say 5 years, I've become a big fan of podcasts for the reasons you said, which are you're hearing from people that have actually done it, right? So they're talking about their own like visceral experiences. And then two, like, I think technology is moving so quickly now that, you know, the lessons of a book are sometimes out of date, or most of the time out of date. And so I've learned to really enjoy podcast stories, listen to people actually who are doing it, which is why I started my podcast,
Masters of Scale is definitely a good one. And I'm very obsessed with product. I actually went and got my product certificate from, I went to product school just so I could speak the same language as my product manager. But I think the things that are most important, if you've done the sales part and you've done the ops part, is to understand how to create something that's going to sell. And for that, I think it's more so focusing on minimum viable product and or being able to de-risk the startup for yourself, which is learning from other founders and listening to as many podcasts that you possibly can of other founders talking about how they failed and why they failed, and then how they were able to pivot. Mm. And pivoting is a very scary thing, but we all have done it. And the ones that do it the best way are the ones who succeed.
Yeah. Pivot's a crucible moment, right? Sequoia would say, like, I've seen founders just fail. They do that. Raises the stakes. What's one mistake you see entrepreneurs make?
One mistake I see entrepreneurs make: raise too early, not focus on revenue, build a product without talking to their customers and making assumptions, and then ending up with something in their hands that nobody uses. That's a frequent one. I think or building tech without, like, we're in such a different age now. Like, you can build a product without building tech. You can build no code solutions that are like very small, minimized MVPs, where you can create proof of concept and see if someone's interested in them. Ignore that. You could put Figma screens together and sell an idea before you start raising money and show that someone is willing to or wanting to buy your solution based on what you're showing them. And then after that, it's all about iterations and making it better. So I think a lot of us think that we have to build this really, really robust tool with all the bells and whistles, and we just don't. And I think that's the biggest lesson that I've learned these past three years, is building something that solves one thing for a few people, that makes it better, faster, cheaper, whatever it is, and then going and multiplying that and finding a market that has more of those people and going after it.
Yeah, makes sense. If you could have dinner with any entrepreneur, dead or alive, who would it be?
I would love to talk to Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, he's amazing.
I would love to talk to him only because I recently read that the first investors he had were, I think, his siblings. which I thought was super cool.
And some of his family declined the opportunity to angel invest, and now it'd be worth like, I don't know, hundreds of millions of dollars or something like that for like a $10,000 investment.
And I resonate with that because I had the same thing. Some of I have two siblings. My siblings invested, some of my family members didn't, some of them did. But the way that he built that company, what it was and what it has become today is the way that I look at Eco. So I just, even if it was like for 2 minutes, in all honesty. But yeah, that's definitely a founder I respect. I love the way that he's grown the company and built this.
Yeah, he built an enduring empire. Yeah, enduring business, one of the most enduring, successful companies in history. I never got to interact with him, obviously, when I was at Amazon, but I did interact with Andy Jassy a few times, and that was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, in the room. He's like, whose project is this? What's one thing you do to unwind after a long week, if there is such a thing as a week as a founder?
If I have a hoop that's close to me, I'll go play ball. If not, I'll work out. If I've had a tough week, first of all, I try to work out every day. I think every founder needs the dopamine there. But if I've had a really hard week, then my weekend is just really kind of hunkering down and figuring out what activities I can do. If I can do any of them outside, like hiking with my dog or something, I'll try to do that. For sure is always good. I've had moments where we've just had a few bad days in the past where I've not wanted to do anything. And that's when you know you have to like force yourself to go and do that activity. But breaking a sweat is always a good idea.
I love that. Well, Melise, thanks so much for coming on the program. I'm sure there's lots of founders and entrepreneurs out there that'll get a ton of value from listening to this. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Likewise.